This is Mae Brussel. It is tape number 849, March the 14th, 1988. Now that I'm not on the radio, not doing my radio program, I suggest that if this information that you receive on the tape is of interest to you, that in some way you make copies of the tapes for people who might listen and become informed. Always copy the bibliography sheet that accompanies the tape. Never send a tape without the bibliography sheet. But try to use the information in some way with letters to the editor, talk shows, call up, and so forth. But I depend on you now for some more activism. And if it comes from everywhere, there's less chance that one or two people can be silenced. There was an obituary in the paper this morning. Jamie Mock Robbins, early sanctuary leader. The Reverend Jamie Mock Robbins was an early leader in the sanctuary movement to aid Central American refugees. He died Thursday at the ripe old age of 32. Mock Robbins was the co-pastor of the University Baptist Church. He's been battling cancer since October. That's a five-month cancer, the quickest that we have of these people with knowledgeable information or making social changes. Jack Ruby, who had a three-week cancer, but this is a five-month cancer, and he is dead at age 32. In 1982, under the direction of Mock Robbins and Reverend Cook, University Baptist became the first church in the Pacific Northwest to declare itself a sanctuary for refugees fleeing persecution in Central America. 50 refugees have been sheltered in the church. Mock Robbins spent much of his 4 years in Central America working with schools and churches and helped organize relief in 1986 for victims of San Salvador earthquake that left 1,000 people dead. Another quick cancer case that is pertinent. Last November 20th, 1987, there was an article regarding Michael Aquino and the Satanic Church, and it's from the San Francisco Chronicle, saying that Aquino was suing the San Francisco Police Department for an illegal search and seizure of property from his home on Leavenworth in San Francisco, and for illegal retention of property in violation of his constitutional rights. And he claimed that his claim was dated November 12th, that the city of San Francisco and the police department had gone into his home, and he named police officers Glenn Pamphiloff and Sandra Gallant. The article goes into the complaint he has, but there's a paragraph of interest here. For the moment, Aquino's home at 2430 Leavenworth Street was raided August 14th by police and FBI agents and officers from the Army's Criminal Investigation Division, armed with a search warrant authorizing them to look for evidence of child molestation. Then a listener to World Watchers who sent me this article that I had earlier but would probably not have remembered, in conjunction with the demise in the Bay Area in a small city, San Leandro, near San Francisco, has an obituary about Richard L. LaForce. Richard LaForce, 65, died of cancer at home Friday. A native of Colorado, he only recently retired from a 40-year career as a warrant officer in the Army's Criminal Investigation Division, working out of the Presidio in San Francisco. He got cancer just 3 months earlier. He was working November the 20th. The Presidio Investigation Committee was going into the home of Michael Aquino, and that was published November the 20th. March the 1st, there's the death of a gentleman who worked with the Presidio in San Francisco, and there had been complaints from 1982 on about Michael Aquino and children that were taken to the hospital associated with the military base at the Presidio Letterman Hospital. So Michael Aquino, as I mentioned on a broadcast several weeks ago, was under observation by some people since 1982, and one of the criminal investigators, just as this trial is being totally closed down, and he was really never named as a defendant, even with strong evidence and recognition by children that they had been taken to his home, one of the criminal investigators from the Presidio is dead of cancer. I mentioned last week the homicide of a woman in the San Francisco area, Gretchen Burford Durnitz, 49 years old, who went to the Versatel window at the bank and sitting in her car was a gentleman with a butcher knife who slashed her up and killed her when she went back to her car, the Versatel Wells Fargo Bank. The San Francisco Chronicle had one sentence in their article. It was different than the Examiner, the Daily Examiner. It said that Dernitz worked as an attorney in private practice, specializing in family, child abuse, and criminal law. I mentioned her before, but the word child abuse, for you researchers who want the date, came from San Francisco Chronicle, February 29th, and she was interested in that particular subject. Another obituary, March the 1st, Presidio woman brutally slain. The wife of an Army sergeant was found brutally beaten in her home. She was shot and stabbed to death in their residence on the military base where all of this activity is churning and happening. Cheryl Stevens, 27, was found in a pool of blood when her husband returned home with the small children. Neighbors said that they didn't hear anything, and the article says you might have expected that they would. There's hundreds of neighbors who could have been expected to hear or have seen the commotion. The FBI has no leads in the case. Three bullets tore her upper body. A bullet grazed her head. She had numerous stab wounds and bruises on the neck, arms, and hands. They found a large kitchen knife near her left hand, a smaller knife. She had put up a strong fight. This is the third slaying on the Presidio in 10 years. I have mentioned on the World Watchers that as soon as Reagan is out of office, there are going to be a lot of books about his administration. Two of them were just in the newspaper this week. And as I said before, we have to start saving our money because there will be so many books that will be pouring out about the Reagan administration. And, of course, President George Bush and CIA Director William Webster will distance themselves from the fact that they participated in these very activities with the current president of the United States. The first book described is called Secret Warriors, Inside the Covert Military Operations of the Reagan Era, by Stephen Emerson. And this goes into various CIA plans, how Reagan set up highly secret units in the early 1980s. That's as soon as the Pentagon set them up, as soon as Reagan was elected by November, or even prior, just prior to that, they knew that he would be the next president of the United States. And it set up these secret units in the early 80s, and he was inaugurated in January 81. And some of these units were never disclosed either to Congress or some senior military officials or intelligence agencies. They were outside the agencies. And this article refers to the group called Yellow Fruit that I've talked about, but never had enough time to really develop and go into it. There are sections, chapters on the covert army unit codenamed Yellow Fruit. And that was a unit that I had said before was meant to be disbanded after the October 80 surprise that failed in Iran that allowed the hostages to not be rescued and made Reagan President Bush vice president. Incidentally, if my voice is tired, that comes from so many nice people calling for the last week on the telephone, and I'm sure you hear the difference. I've been talking too much on the phone. Between now and next week when I make a tape for you, I hope to rest my voice. There's just been a lot of very attentive people and newspaper people, TV, radio, a lot of media coverage on what's happening here. So bear with me with the tired voice, and we'll hope to rest it by next week if things let up a little bit. This book, The Secret Warriors, The Inside of the Covert Military Operations of the Reagan Era, is important because, as I said, these policies are made every 20 years. And even before he was inaugurated, even by a fluke, if Mondale had won, the same policies would be in hand. And the same secret team and the Willard Zuckers and the Ollie Norths and so forth would still be doing their operations because these people control all our policies and don't include the CIA, the Defense Department, or anybody else, members of Congress, in what they are doing. It just happened this time. They were caught. So there's a list of materials in the San Francisco Chronicle account. It was in the New York Times today, too, that are in the book. And one interesting one is a classified CIA document drafted in 1984 that said the CIA had reason to believe that a company headed by one of their key intermediaries, and that turns out to be Albert Hakim, may be associated with Iran terrorist-supported activities being run out of the Iranian installations in Vienna and Barcelona. And I had on the air a while back, and so did David Emery, material from a newspaper that we got in San Jose that Albert Hakim was in touch with our ambassador, Helena von Dahm. And, of course, I've linked her for years to Otto von Bolschwing and the Reinhard Gehlen operation. So we'll see more about Hakim and Vienna in this book, Secret Warriors by Stephen Emerson, a very important book on how the operations go no matter who is president. Another book on a subject that I've only done a few broadcasts on. In fact, I was speaking about this subject on the broadcast on KPFK when I got the call, "You'll never be heard on the air again." This book is called Low Intensity Warfare, Counterinsurgency and Pro-Insurgency and Anti-Terrorism in the 80s. A long title and a very important book, Low Intensity Warfare, Counterinsurgency, Pro-Insurgency, Anti-Terrorism in the 80s, edited by Michael Clare, K-L-A-R-E, and Peter Kornbluh, K-O-R-N-B-L-U-H, Pantheon Books. This is $8.95 in a paper bound. It was reviewed in the newspaper in these times. And this goes into the forming of the Special Forces in 1962, the year before Kennedy was killed, so that the article implies that high tech at the fringes meets John Kennedy's new frontier. But the fact that the Special Forces was formed 1 year before Kennedy was killed and the plans to murder him were set up in 1960 with Robert Mayhew and the intelligence and mafia coordinated branches, then the heritage of Kennedy could be aligned to this terrorism and the murders and the deaths, even though he only lived 1,000 days and may not have had the faintest idea what the Special Forces would be doing after he's dead. And this book goes into how Ronald Reagan, who had the Red Menace in front of him all along, when he became president, the reviewer of the book says he saw the bear's paw wherever third world nations thumb their nose at Uncle Sam. And this tells about their divisions of high intensity is World War III, and also high intensity, the plans are on the drawing board for World War IV. Medium intensity, Iran-Iraq War. Low intensity is just about anything else. A protracted contra war to stationing Marines in Lebanon, and it's low intensity conflict that we're feeling in the United States, I feel, at this time. Now, this book on low-intensity warfare, counterinsurgency, goes into the Pentagon spending, they describe them as Rambo-esque special operations forces, which is the Delta Force, the SEALs team. And that Delta Force SEALs team is the part that Michael Aquino from the Pentagon is partaking in, as the lieutenant colonel, and Ollie North. And the book goes into the rapid deployment forces, the light infantry divisions, and their attendant hardware that has sextupled since 1981. Not only has Ronald Reagan appointed over 275 judges, but he has increased the budget six times over, which is described as the fastest growing component of the war budget. Its current annual budget is $2.5 billion, and it's put in the hands of individuals who melt into your community but who are trained to take over hamlets and towns, that these are the people that will take over America and be turned against America. That is what is happening now. This book says that this figure doesn't even include the billions spent each year on CIA covert operations, which have tripled under Ronald Reagan, and much of the combat in low-intensity warfare is non-military, with billions more going into psychological operations. Of course, Michael Aquino of the Church of Set is an expert in psychological operations, and they go into foreign aid to win the hearts and minds of the population they're going to target. El Salvador alone has cost $2 billion since 1980, three-fourths of it related to the war. So this is a very important book, Michael T. Clare and Mr. Kornbluh, Pantheon Books, $8.95. Those are two excellent subjects, and I predicted that this era would see soon all of these books. The question is, how fast can you operate to stop this when the Pentagon is swinging their muscle into these kinds of low-intensity conflicts where they take over the newspapers, combine the radio stations, and also use agents to call and say, you never can be heard on the radio again. So the radio isn't free. And I didn't doubt for a minute that the call I got came from this kind of a specific operation, particularly since when another person got a telephone call and reached me saying, I'm a fascist, I'm a proud of it, and another one being told his head would be cut off and we're going to shit down your neck. The feces and the mutilation are part of the occult. The occult is part of the military, and the military is part of the Nazi rituals. Wall Street Journal had a story this morning. Many of you saw it on all the papers about Robert McFarlane is going to plead guilty, but don't sit on the edge of your chair and think that he's another John Dean who's going to tell you what is happening. Arthur Lyman, the special prosecutor for the House Intelligence Committee, made it very loud and clear on NBC News this morning that McFarlane will not implicate George Bush. So no matter what he says, it will not bring in George Bush. Lyndon LaRouche is having an interesting twist in his trial. I haven't done anything on that. There have been articles covering it. Mr. Frankenhauser, a man who worked with the Nazi Party and the FBI, was infiltrating and working with LaRouche. LaRouche deserved the pain in the neck he got from Frankenhauser if he trusted a man who worked with the Klan and the Nazi Party. But now, even LaRouche's own attorney is taking another look at their case. And this story just came out today in Boston. It says 2 months into the trial of Lyndon LaRouche comes evidence supporting the political extremist claim that he is the target of plots by the FBI, the CIA, and even Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. His own defense lawyer, who dismissed LaRouche originally for some of his conspiracy theories and thought they were bizarre, is changing his opinion. The trial of LaRouche involves 6 aides and 5 political organizations about fraud and conspiracy and taking money from people who donated to him. And the defense lawyers are saying, we want the files on the White House and Vice President George Bush. That's the man named George Bush, is named twice in the articles regarding the new turn in these events, and evidence suggesting infiltration of the LaRouche group. The prosecutors insisted that talk of FBI, CIA, and other government infiltration, getting declassified documents, is irrelevant. They never say the NSC or the National Security Agency, the NSA. It's always the FBI and CIA, and Iran-Contra was about the NSC and the NSA. But the newspaper reported today that right now the tables are turned on the government and they've been ordered to search their papers to find material on the FBI, the CIA, and the National Security Council and George Bush. It would be nice if Lyndon LaRouche, the man that everybody kicks on, talks about, and hates, they love to hate him, and I give credit for a lot of the information I got. I never would have gotten it without his publications. He's hitting the matter of George Bush. It seems that his lawyer last week got a memo from the memo from retired Air Force Major General Richard Secord to Oliver North, in which Secord says that a retired Army Sergeant Major Fred Lewis met with the FBI and other agencies, and they began to collect information against LaRouche. The defense demanded the FBI files that mention anything about Army Sergeant Major Fred Lewis be made available to them, because there's a document which shows that Lewis and 2 Texas lawmen worked as government informants, and the CIA and FBI asked them to infiltrate LaRouche. Lewis and the lawmen, this is the military and the Texas lawmen, were involved in 2 Texas companies used by the Pentagon and the CIA for covert activities. One might have been Peregrine, and I mentioned on the air several Texas companies that were covers. One probably surely is Peregrine, but there are 2 Texas companies that were used by the Pentagon for CIA. And then the report on this LaRouche case now says that the mere existence of documents of Richard Secord, General Secord, and Oliver North, one a, in quotes, retired general, and the other from the National Security Council, sets this case at a different pace. And the even his own defense attorney begins to see now, a man named Michael Riley, that this is going in a different direction that he didn't believe LaRouche. He said, "This is a fundamental change in my defense strategy. I should have had this 18 months ago. I have a right to have it before I pursue the case." Another defense attorney, William Moffitt, said his legal strategy will be affected by documents involving Oliver North and General Secord and two Texas companies used by the Pentagon, used by the CIA to discredit Lyndon LaRouche. So I'll do more and update the LaRouche case soon, but that's an important new twist. Now, Carl Rowan, the Black syndicated columnist, has a story this week that may not be in your newspaper, so I'm almost, I think I'll read the whole thing to you. I usually outline and paraphrase, but this is very important. Carl Rowan worked for U.S. Information Agency, which is a branch of the CIA, the intelligence community. He was selected as the token spokesman to present the Warren Report to the world the day it was published as being the definitive story of how a loner, Lee Harvey Oswald, shot John Kennedy. Now, Carl Rowan never, I don't think, in his wildest dreams, realized how a black intelligence agent of the establishment who worked his way into there, he never could visualize that not only after John Kennedy was murdered and the Warren Commission report came out in 1964, then Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were killed in 1968, and that fascists and Nazis, outright fascists and Nazis, and not neo-Nazis, but German Nazis along with American Nazis, but particularly German, were involved in the murder of a network of organizations of Reverend Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and John Kennedy. So he danced to their tune going back to 1964, pardon me, and I have copies of the documents of his press conference. But now Carl Rowan sees something different since he took that role in 1964, and he's recognizing one of the big sources of problems in the world 24 years later, namely Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger and his mentor Fritz Kramer are important to the George Bush story that I'll go into in a few minutes. But Carl Rowan is commenting about the memos that have been revealed of Henry Kissinger that were in the newspaper last week, suggesting how the Israeli government should handle their trouble in the Gaza Strip. What Henry Kissinger wrote is that Israel should stop the news media from entry into the territories involved in the present demonstrations. Don't let any news people there. And accept the short-term world criticism, because that's all it ever is short-term. People have a memory of about 7 hours to 2 days. And he suggested take the short-term world criticism, as Israel had to take by going into Lebanon in 1982 and killing hundreds of women and children. He said, take the short term and accept your criticism from the world press, you know, for what you're doing. But he suggested don't allow the press in. And what you should do is put down the insurrection as quickly as possible, overwhelmingly, brutally, and rapid. Brutally is what he worked out with Pinochet in Chile, with Mr. Zia in Pakistan, in Iran with the Shah when the Shah came in and Mosaddegh was out, with Mr. Diem in Vietnam, with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia, and Joseph Mengele and the top Nazis in Brazil. That do it brutally and rapidly and don't tell the press. That's Henry Kissinger caught with a memo. Now, Carl Rowan said of all the qualities of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, perhaps the most remarkable are these: his shrewdness in using official secrecy, informal off-the-record rules to hide his personal views and actions that have led to significant and enduring foreign policy blunders. And when you think of the foreign policy blunders, remember that Henry Kissinger has been behind every single one of them in South Africa, Middle East, India, Southeast Asia, and in the United States. Rowan says his use of indignation, of feigned or real, to keep the public from viewing him as a villain, when he was wiretapping journalists, when he was bombing Cambodia, when he was responsible for the deterioration of Americans' position in Latin America, the encouragement of apartheid regime in South Africa. He created a dangerous Middle East mess that has left Secretary of State George Shultz on the knees supplicant to Israel Prime Minister Shamir. even though Shamir and his policies would never survive without U.S. economic support. Now Kissinger has been caught again moving in the shadows of secrecy, saying privately what he dares not say publicly. He is portrayed as stealthily influencing countries like South Africa and Israel to do outrageous, immoral, eventually self-destroying things. Can you imagine Henry Kissinger saying publicly that the way to halt insurrection in Palestine with boys, women, men in the Israeli-occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip is to strike, you know, as quickly as possible? Isn't this vintage Kissinger ass, and isn't this outrageous, suggesting these tactics and be overwhelmingly brutal, be fast, don't let the press see this? Can you imagine him saying that publicly? And Henry Kissinger has been getting the press on Nightline and CBS and NBC, always the elder statesman, balancing this power struggle in Washington, making himself and his cronies from Kissinger Associates, Mr. Eagle Berger, and his crony Alexander Haig, look like great statesmen. Carl Rowan says, this is vintage Kissinger, the secret advisor, but that is what Kissinger said to about 8 members of the Conference of Presidents of major American Jewish organizations at a breakfast meeting in February. Would you expect Kissinger to state publicly that to stop violence in the occupied areas, the first step should be to throw out the television like they did in South Africa? No, but Mr. Berman's memo says that Kissinger said it privately. Kissinger told Israel to adopt the tactics of the hated Botha regime that decided it was better to beat and kill people when they were out of view of newsmen and cameras. The trouble is that Kissinger's private views and urging on behalf of Israel are now made public. The New York Times got a copy of Berman's summary of what Kissinger said. Goodness knows what else was in there. As has so often been the case, Kissinger's reaction was to blame the news media for finding out what he was doing it and saying it in the shadows. Remember the White House plumbers that were there because stories were leaking about, you know, this Kissinger, the Fuhrer in the White House, running the National Security Council for President Nixon. Once Kennedy's head was blown off, one in Dallas and one in Los Angeles, Nixon finally got the White House thrown with Kissinger at his right hand advising him. And when things were wrong and people caught on that America not only had these assassinations, but that America was changing, it was Kissinger who was advising in the shadows. Rowan says, well, it's sort of disgusting to millions of us Americans to learn that Kissinger privately admires police and military brutality and press restrictions. Rowan's a slower learner, I might add. He said that he approves of the various barbarous repressions of South Africa that deny a black majority political, economic, and social justice, and Kissinger is secretly urging Israel to behave like South Africa. Mr. Berman's 4-page memo, dated February the 3rd, indicated that Kissinger was privately, and this goes on again to the role of Kissinger, undermining George Shultz's efforts in the mission of peace in the Middle East to get Shamir and the hardline Israelis to agree to the end of occupation in certain areas, accept the concept of land for peace. The memo quotes Kissinger as saying that the peace conference may lead to a disaster. Now, I have articles on Henry Kissinger's investment and interest in turning the Gaza Strip into a Monte Carlo mafia type of gambling organization, along with some prominent Israelis and people in America. And he doesn't want his real estate given up that Israel has secured for him. Heavens no. And he is saying, trying to sabotage the peace conference of Shamir and the other persons trying to work out a solution. Carl Rowan said, why doesn't Kissinger clear the air by telling us whether he really likes the Botha regime in South Africa, whether he urged Israel to move brutally and rapidly, which is what was in the memos, and to squelch the Palestinians, and whether he prefers to shoot Palestinian insurgents rather than break their bones? At first it was convenient to break their bones, but tell us, Henry, is it better to shoot them? And what are you doing writing these kinds of memos? He asked. He said, it's time we heard from the real Henry Kissinger. Well, I suggest it's time we heard from the real Fritz Kramer, a la Henry Kissinger. And that is the real Kissinger, who's been there for everyone to see what he's done to India, Portugal, Brazil, all these various countries, Kissinger and his cohorts, and Kissinger and Kramer. So finally, Karl Rowan is getting a whiff of the real Kissinger. I'll turn over this tape now and continue part two of George Bush and the Odessa Network and what we have to look forward to when George Bush is made president of the United States.